everyone, it is me, Anna. Welcome to episode 31 of my podcast, Your Favorite YA Bookworm. I hope you're all doing all right. Today's episode is on Ninth House by Leigh Bardugo. It is her first adult novel, and I believe it is new adult. So it is not your typical YA story, since it is NA instead of YA. It is quite dark and contains many triggered things, such as child molesting, drug abuse, and rape. Therefore, please listen to this episode at your own discretion. Before diving into this episode, a kind reminder to please rate, share, and subscribe to my podcast, mostly on iTunes. It won't take you more than 30 seconds, and it will help me a lot. First, I am going to give a little context of the story. Galaxy Stern, who goes by Alex, is a young adult. I believe she is in her 20s, she did not finish high school, she became a drug dealer and drug addict and was found in a very gory scene, passed out. All her friends were dead, some of them brutally murdered, and she was the only survivor. She's a special young lady as she can see ghosts. When she woke up in the hospital, Dean Sando from Yale was there and made her an offer. She could join one of the secret societies of Yale, the Ninth House, whose members' duty is to supervise the magic occult endeavors of the other houses, and in exchange she will go to Yale for free. She accepts as she feels this is a new beginning. Now that you know the premise of the book, I will explain how it is structured. It is not a chronological book. Chapter 1 is during the spring semester, and then you go back to fall, and then winter, and then back to fall. In each chapter, you change semesters. This was a little confusing, not going to lie. There was a lot of jargon and useless information, and I was like, what is going on? And you know, not knowing what is going on at the beginning of the book is normal, but this book was more confusing than usual, and it was very slow in the first half. There were just too many useless details from my point of view. But I am not the only one who felt like this. I saw some reviews of people who were annoyed by this too. For the sake of the length of the episode, I will retell the book chronologically. So fall, winter, and then spring. So fall, Alex arrived at her dorm at Yale and was meeting with her new roommates when Darlington arrived, and he was like, hey cousin, and she was like, hey cousin. She had no idea who he was, but she was like, I guess this is regarding the secret society thing, and it was. Darlington is known as the golden boy and the gentleman of the Ninth House because of his golden retriever attitude, impeccable manners, and his love for the Ninth House. Well, he comes to get her, he's kind of annoyed about her, he wanted to choose his successor, so he's Dante. They have code names. Darlington is now Virgil, since he's no longer a Dante, since his Virgil finished school. So now he's a Virgil and Alex is a Dante. Side note, the names refer to the Divine Comedy by Dante Alighieri, in which Virgil guides Dante through the different levels of hell. And well, he read her file and he's like, oh my gosh, such a waste of a person. But he's jealous. She can see ghosts. As for rituals, Virgil and Dante of the Ninth House need to drink a potion to be able to see ghosts and chase them out. So the rituals of the other houses are not disrupted, and she doesn't have to take the potion since she can already see them. So that's why he's jealous. We have a little backstory of Dante. He was raised by his grandfather since his parents wanted to live their best life, and that did not include taking care of their baby. His grandfather put a lot of effort into his education and manners. They lived in the same town as Yale. The parents wanted to sell the mansion when the granddad and Darlington lived, but the granddad refused. One day he got very ill and died. Darlington was still not 18 and did not have access to his college money until then. He refused to sell the house his granddad had left him, even if his parents pressured him. He started working to pay the bills, and he was just surviving and going to school. He had always been attracted to magic, so he decided to experiment with alchemy. His experiment went wrong, and he ended up in a hospital, and he woke up to Dean Sando, the boss of the University of the Ninth House, with the same offer Alex had received. Darlington took his job as Dante very seriously, as he got what he had longed for, magic. As mentioned, the ninth house is supposed to be like the police and monitor the other houses, and Darlington really felt like a knight on his quest. Everyone loved and still loves him since he is so amazing, including the readers, but to be honest, for me, he's a big meh. I am not fond of Golden Retriever boys. He was just so uninteresting to me. If you have listened to my other episodes, you know I just can't with the characters with a hero complex. I find them so boring and annoying, but I digress. Darlington is a little of an ass with Alex because she did not meet his expectations of what he wanted on a Dante. But I mean, it's his own fault. If you do not want to be disappointed, don't expect anything. Even though he has his reservations, he teaches her stuff, and when he is an ass, he feels bad and does something cute for her to make up for it. But it is not really for her, but for himself, so he does not feel bad. I swear, I don't know why many of the readers like him. To me, he is an ass. Yeah, he's suffering the past and struggle, but guess what? So has everyone in this book, as life is not a fairy tale. But well, I digress once again. So one time, he was an ass, and to make up for it, he used magic moths to absorb the tats that covered Alex's body because she felt uncomfortable for them to be visible in her new environment. He warns her, though, that saliva will revert the magic. He also shows her how to guard her residence of ghosts, but this is not so much a thing just for her, since they are supposed to keep ghosts at bay for rituals. It is part of her normal training. So, like, the way you, like, you know, like, scare ghosts away is by saying death proverbs and ghosts go away, or by throwing cemetery dirt at them as they are attracted by deep emotions and blood or anything that is full of life, and they are repulsed by anything that has to do with death as they long for life. We have a few descriptions of rituals and stuff they attend, but sincerely the info and details are not really interesting, so I will not go over them and I will skip to the end of the semester. One day, Darlington and Alex go to the old house of one of the houses that no longer owns a physical house, and they are currently lobbying for one. Also, I should have mentioned to those who did not read the book that the magic they do in the houses is important for the elite of the world. They predict financial crises and stuff. But back to where we were, they go there to fix all magic. There's like a weather thing, and so like they need to go there to keep the weather under control. Something like that. They were chatting and stuff when Darlington heard a weird noise. He did not want to worry Alex, so he kept his cool while chatting. He discovered something. He realized it was her. Alex was the one who murdered everyone in the gory scene where she was found passed out on drugs. No one thought she was the killer because she's super skinny and has no force, and the killer brutally murdered her friends of the time. Alex does not deny it, and Darlington, like the good hero he thinks he is, tells her he needs to tell the dean. Alex accepts her fate, and then the sound Darlington had heard got louder. They get closer to where it is coming from, and it seems like it is a portal. Darlington is about to close it when he gets sucked up by it, but he manages to tell Alex it's not a portal, it's a M. Like, he just manages to say M. So now Darlington is going back. So now Darlington is gone. Alex tells the dean, and he says that they are going to try to retrieve him in the next big full moon during winter, and that for now they need to keep it as a secret. Now we arrive to winter semester. Before diving in, I will explain how Alex managed to kill her old friends. So time for a little throwback / backstory. So she became a junkie in middle school after she went on a field trip. She had always suffered because she could see ghosts. Her life was getting a little better now that she stopped saying she could see ghosts, so they threw her in her new school. There, she was acting normal and she ignored ghosts, and she even made a friend. She used the bathroom on the field trip before they went back to school, and she saw that she had her period. She got a little stressed and called her only friend so she could lend her a tampon or pad. when she was rinsing her hands, and trigger warning here, there was a ghost who managed to touch her. She was surprised because they could not touch her, but this one could, and he threw her on the floor and she was molested. She screamed and her teacher found her on the floor with her panties on the floor and lots of blood in between her legs. Everyone thought she was molested by a person and tried to make her talk, but how could she explain it was a ghost? Everyone in school made fun of her because her friend of the time told what happened to everyone and she was called Carrie. Eventually, a senior kid felt pity towards Alex and invited her to hang with her and her friends who were older and junkies. They introduced her to marijuana and she realized that when she smoked, she could not see ghosts anymore. So, of course, she started smoking all the time and tried harder drugs. Her mom tried to send her to a rehab center, but Alex escaped and decided not to go home anymore. She started dating Len, the ex-boyfriend of the kid who introduced her to that world. He was a dealer, so she became one too. They had a little apartment called Ground Zero, where other friends lived too. Alex was obsessed with her boyfriend. She would do anything to please him, even if it meant doing sexual favors to others. But when she did, he got very mad and called her a whore, and she did everything to be on the good side with him again. One day, he brought another girl, Haley. She and Alex became besties, and after they dreamed of saving money, going to a community college, and bettering their lives. Len was trying for his boss to upgrade him to harder drugs, but he did not want to until his brutal cousin, Ariel, arrived. He liked Len because he liked to laugh at him, although Len thought he was laughing with him. Ariel was a very dangerous person, mostly to women. One day, Ariel was going to hang at Len's. Len told Alex to clean, but she did not want to because she knew Ariel was going to abuse her and Haley. She took Haley to the movies and she fell asleep to wake up with Haley gone. Haley wanted to please Len, so she went to the party so she would not be kicked out of the apartment by Len. Alex had no money, so she sold the weed she had on her and made her best effort to go back quickly. She arrived quite late and saw Haley standing and looking very sad. Alex was like, "What's up, Haley?" But when she was about to touch her, her hand went through. Haley was dead. It was her ghost. She was too late, and then she saw Haley's corpse there. She cried and screamed. Len arrived and was like, "What an inconvenience. Let's drop her body outside. They're going to think she did an overdose." Alex could not accept this. This was her friend, her best friend. So she called on Haley's ghost. She extended her hand and told her to stay with her. Haley grabbed her hand and kind of possessed Alex. They were both inside of her, which gave Alex a lot of strength. Haley used to play baseball, so they took a bat and killed everyone who was in Ground Zero, including Ariel. With Haley's strength, Alex bathed in the river and passed out next to Haley's corpse. Since Haley was high on fentanyl, after possessing Alex, it passed to her, so when she was found and brought to the hospital, they did not think of her as the killer. So yeah, Alex's backstory is pretty dark, but I told you this was a dark book. Now, back to Winter. Alex is barely surviving school, pretending she's a normal kid and doing all her ninth house duties without Darlington. She can't wait for him to be brought back, even if that means she will be thrown out once Darlington tells the dean she is a murderer. One night, while attending a ceremony, there was something bad trying to cross the veil. Side note, these cult houses are in Yale because it is the place of the new continent where the veil between the dead and us is thinner. Even ghosts are kind of afraid of this thing that is trying to pass, but in the end, nothing happens. But Alex is unsettled. On her way back to her dorm, she's called because there was a murder on campus, and as Dante, she needs to check if none of the houses were involved. She meets there with Centurion, a police officer who is part of the ninth house, but hates all the occult shit, so he's not very cooperative. He tells her it was the boyfriend of the victim, so to drop it. But something does not feel right with Alex. She uses one of her two compulsion gold coins with another officer to check the body of the dead girl, whose name is Tara, who used to be a junkie and drug dealer. After Alex sends a report to Dean Sando, he tells her it seems it's nothing unnatural, so to drop it and rest. But Alex just has this feeling something is wrong, so she disobeys him. She convinces Pamela, the oculus of the ninth house, so basically the butler of their physical house, Il Bastone, an assistant of Virgil and Dante, to help her. Alex convinces her to go with her to the morgue. Alex uses her dealer skills to pretend she's the cousin of Tara and convince the receptionist that Detective Turner, so Centurion, gave her his permission to pay her respects to Tara. She uses another persuasion coin with the nurse who goes with her. Alex then uses magic to partially revive Tara's body to try to figure out who killed her. By touching her wound, she sees that indeed it was her boyfriend, Lance, who killed her. Detective Turner then arrives and warns her to stop snooping around and that if there is something magical, he will tell her. He also tells her to stop interfering with his investigation, but of course, Alex does not. Alex stays that night at Darlington's house because she needed to drop his car there, and she falls asleep on his bed. She felt his presence there, but he was not there. She fell asleep on his bed and dreamed that he was on his bed with her and was hugging her and telling her he was going to be with her. And she felt his hands on her abdomen, but she felt his hands were like claws instead of hands. And here I was like, oh, okay, I guess he will be the love interest. Alex had mentioned he's handsome, but I did not think they were going to be a thing. Although in one of the rides they went together, he was drugged, and the drug made him want desperately Alex. He needed her touch, so I guess he will. Part of me is like, really? Is there nobody else? But at the same time, I could not care less. But remember the claw part? But like, so, side. Remember the claw part. It will be important. Alex, after waking up, leaves. She stops at the mart to buy candy. When out of nowhere, she gets attacked by a golem. Nobody can see it, only her. So she looks like a mad lady running around being thrown by this invisible force. But suddenly, one of the ghosts that is always around there, and that is one of the most famous in town for having killed his fiancée and then himself, the bridegroom, comes to her aid. She ends up escaping and makes it to Il Bastone. But the golem had thrown at her a powder that is making her burn inside. Pam helps her inside the house and makes her drink a disgusting thing to get rid of the powder that is eating her inside out. Later on, Dean Sando comes and he blames the attack on Alex. He says it's her powers that probably attacked the golem. Pam is like, excuse me? This is like saying her skirt was too short. The dean apologizes, but he still believes it. Alex tells him it's obvious one of the houses is behind the murder and her attack, and he's like, your suspicions are not proof enough. Besides, Centurion is on the case, so just drop it and try to keep being normal, for God's sake. But this makes Alex even more determined to find a true culprit because they tried to kill her just now. She looks out of the window and she sees that the bridegroom is staring at her. She knows he knows something. She needs to speak with him. She asks Pam for her help on how to communicate with the dead. And now is when the action begins. Finally! Alex contacts one of the people from one of the houses. To be honest, the houses confuse me a little, so I will say no names nor what they are for, because this part is basically useless information from the book. Like, it contributes barely anything to the plot, but I digress again. They go meet a girl from one of them. Alex stole a thing from another house as payment. The girl is like, I feel like not helping now that you gave me what I wanted. So Alex uses her skills from the days she used to be a dealer, grabs the girl by the lip, and ends up trapping her head in her arm and threatens her. The girl ends up leaving her and lets her use the ritual placed for her to do her ritual. For this ritual, Alex needs to literally drown and die. Pam drowns her and Alex is at the crossroads of the afterlife. She needs to enter a river and she can talk there with the bridegroom. He tells her he did not kill his fiance and that he wants to find out who did it so his name is cleared. They make a deal. Alex will find out who the killer is, and the bridegroom needs to find Tara in the afterlife so they can know who the true killer is, because even if Alex saw it, it was the boyfriend, she does not believe it. They shake hands and tell each other their true names. This is important because names are very important. With ghost speakers, if you call them by their name or they know your name, a link is created. So now they are bonded. So now that Alex knows his true name, she calls him North. He tells her they can communicate through water and that he needs something with Tara's saliva or blood to find her on the other side. Alex then returns to her body, but it's not an easy task. And I forgot to mention, but he heard a name when she was in the river. She could not get it right, so she's not sure what she heard. For the next scenes I'm going to talk about, I don't remember exactly the order because, as mentioned, we went back and forward in time in the book, so I am not sure of the timeline. Alex returns to her dorm and she finds one of her roommates crying. At a party, she was supposed to go with her but couldn't because she was too busy being attacked and then talking to ghosts and that she completely forgot about it. The roommate was crying because she received a video from Blake, a total douche of the university. Trigger warning, in this video it is shown how he rapes Mercy, the roommate, and he also says racist comments due to her East Asian heritage. The thing is, in the video Mercy says she is consensual to all this, but Alex sees that her tongue is purple. There is a drug from the house that drugged Darlington in the fall. The drug colors your tongue purple and gives away your free will. You become an acolyte for a certain amount of time. Alex declares she will make things right. Alex goes to one of the houses of the drug mansion. The name of the house is Manuscript. There she meets Mike and tells him she needs for him to erase the video. He is reluctant because it will need a lot of people. She tells him it is payback time after she did not tell on the house after they drugged Darlington in the fall. She tells him that their drug, Merity, appears in the video. Mike is okay about this, but he's like, I'll do it, but you need to find out where Blake got the drug since he is not part of Manuscript and he shouldn't have access to it. And he also gives her a star power, a special dust that makes you very convincing to people for some time. Alex then goes to Blake's fraternity, takes the dust and makes everyone who had the video in the house erase it from their phones, and then she takes some revenge. She records Blake eating shit from the toilet and sends the video to everyone. Mercy knows it was her when it blows out, and she's very thankful. But Mike is super angry she did that, but he should have known better. Alex then goes to Tara's apartment, against direct orders from Detective Turner. In the washroom, she finds a dental retainer. She sends it down the drain to North, so her ghost body, the bridegroom. While doing so, a huge man arrives. It is Lance, Tara's ex-boyfriend, who is believed to be the killer. He attacks Alex and asks who killed Tara. So Alex is like, okay, so he's definitely not the killer. And then he's basically killing her. So she extends her hand like when she did with Haley and makes North go inside her and uses his strength. But it's not super efficient because North is super weirded out by being inside of a body and also seeing her memories, because when a ghost is inside her, inside your body, they both can see each other's memories. Lance is about to kill her, but Detective Turner arrives. Lance disappears through a portal, and the detective is like, what the fuck? Even though he knows about magic since he is Centurion. He helps Alex out and takes her to Il Bastone as per her request instead of a hospital. Pam is like,
oh my gosh, I am no doctor. Like, I do not know how to fix you. So she decides to reverse her body for a couple of hours instead of trying to cure it. She asks Turner to go get goat milk, and he does. They put it in a golden bath, and they submerge Alex. Her body is coming back to the state it was a couple of hours prior. The detective leaves, but says he will come back later. Alex uses the water in the bath to talk with North. He tells her it was quite violating what she did, and she was like, sorry, but we both need me alive, and he was like, true. He tells her he has not found Tara yet, which is very weird. Alex later on explains to Turner her hypothesis. He's like, oh my gosh, yeah, the boyfriend is not the killer. They go talk with him using Lamour so people don't know it's actually them. They ask Lance for info regarding who was Tara talking to or dealing with, and in exchange they will try to find the culprit and clear his name in regards to the murder. He cooperates and talks. It is a very long chain of many people dealing with Tara, so I will not go over it. It will take too long and I am running out of time. Alex is starting to believe Sando is a suspect too. Later on, she goes to the banquet of Prof. Bellman, who had talked with Alex and told her she could offer her a summer job, but she needs to keep trying and blah blah. She then talks with the other students who are staff like her, and she now knows Sando was there at last week's party, so he can be the culprit because, like, the party was at the same time as the murder happened. Then, the day of the full moon, they are finally bringing Darlington back. Alex arrives a little early to look through his notes because North tells her he was looking at his case before he disappeared, but she could not find anything. The ritual begins. They bring Darlington's old Virgil, Michelle. While doing the ritual, there is this demonic creature that came. Alex felt the same sensation she felt on the ritual of the night of the death of Tara, of this evil thing trying to cross the veil. And, well, a monster appears, and with Darlington's voice scream, the monster with Darlington's voice screams murder. Everyone panics because this is not right. Sando sends the beast away with incantations. Apparently the portal he disappeared was no portal. It was a mouth, the M word he tried to tell Alex before he disappeared. A demon ate him. Everyone is super sad about this. Alex takes Pam to Il Bastone. Blake arrives. He is using star power and he wants revenge. Alex puts on headphones, but he still manages to make her hear him. Sando arrives and falls into the trap. Blake is about to make Sando kill Alex, and he confesses he killed Tara, but Alex calls on hellhounds. They attack everyone until Sando, now conscious, sends them away. Blake is about to attack Alex, but Pam arrives and kills him. They are all very traumatized after this. Pam, now conscious, sends them away, and Alex hides at the other property of the ninth house, called the Hodge, until Mercy and her mom knock and tell her she needs to be back on track. However, she is done. Blake was a culprit, and she knows Sando will not make pay the other houses for the wrongdoings and attempts on her life because they are the ones who found the ninth house, and Sando said it was an important year to secure money. North wants to talk with her, but she does not give a shit. She's like, the deal is off, so he possesses her during one of her classes and writes 3 dates. She's super pissed about this, but then she makes some research and she discovers that the nexus of power necessary for a house to have a property and do its magic, so like to have a property, like, you know, like some, like, you remember, like, I mentioned one of the houses don't have a physical house, so like now, like, in order to have a house created to be able to do magic, like, this thing is linked to the death of women over the years. So, like, the appearances of houses is linked to the murder of women throughout the years. So now she knows the real culprit is Sando, who was left dry on money after his divorce and said it was a funding year. He was the one who set the trap for Darlington because he was a smart kid and was researching this.
She goes to the president of, like, the university or something's house because she knows Sando is there. She puts on saliva on her arms so her tattoos return. Everyone looks at her, and then she asks Sando to go talk privately. He confesses it was him, but he offers to not kill her if she does not talk. He used the portal to go kill Tara and used persuasion so she thought it was the boyfriend, and he used compulsion to make Blake attack her and also send the golem after her. She is super pissed. He is about to use star power to get rid of her, but North enters her body, so the magic has no effect. And in that, Prof. Bellman enters. Compulsion does not work on her, and she tells Alex she can see the ghost in her. She confesses she is Daisy, North's dead fiancé. She says she is like Alex, a wheel walker, that they can go to different realms, and that there was a ghost from a ritual that went not well and was set loose and was lost, and she did not want it to be inside of her, so she directed it to North, who did not know what was happening, and the ghost took over. It was scared and shot Daisy, and she died, and then it killed North. But Daisy did not want to die, so she took over her servant's body, Gladdy. She ate her soul, and to maintain her youth, she had to feed on souls. And that the Nexus was created not by a murder of a girl, but when she ate the soul of Will Walkers who came to the town throughout the years. She kills Sando, eats his soul, and then tries to eat Alex. But as any good main character, she fights and wins. All the souls Prof. Bellman ate come out of her and attack her soul. North is torn apart by all this. He wants to protect his beloved from the other souls, but he can't. Alex then asks him to help her out one last time by telling her when the hallway is empty. Alex recorded the conversation she had with Sando. She sent it to the Council of Alumni of the Ninth House. They were all shocked and covered it all up as if Sando had a heart attack. The book finally ends with the funeral of Sando. Pam and Alex take Michelle apart from the group and tell her they are going to go find Darlington, that he was transformed into a demon. And Michelle is like, that's impossible. The only way is if he murdered someone. And Alex is like, we have all murdered someone, so not judgment here. They invite Michelle to be part of this super dangerous mission, and the end. Time for my overall thoughts. I think it is a very long book. Almost nothing happens until you arrive to the middle. Going back and forward in time is quite confusing, plus flashbacks. I think the idea is good, but not so much the execution. There is a lot of jargon, and it is quite hard to follow most of the time. It's not super clear. The only thing I actually enjoyed was the mystery part, but other than that, I did not like it much. I did not know who the real evil person was, but also because there was so much jargon, it was kind of hard to figure out. I felt lost with the excessive jargon and the back and forth in time. I did not love any of the characters. I felt they were all very average. I sincerely do not have much to say about them. You already know how I feel about Darlington. Alex is okay, but I just could not care less about her. Like, I couldn't care any less about any characters. Like, if they lived or died, couldn't care less. She's not likable like Alex, but she's also not dislikable. She's just okay. I give this book a 2.5 out of 5 stars. It was very meh. Not the worst, not the best, you know, very middle, so 2.5. There was no spice, so 0 out of 5 chili peppers. I might read the sequel just to see if it gets better. I think it's all for now. So, don't forget to rate, share, and subscribe to my podcast and to my Instagram at your favorite YA bookworm, just like the title of this show. And I will see you next time with the retelling of another book eventually. Also, I'm on Threads, so not only on Instagram, same name, so you can find me there too. Take care and goodbye now.